I feel like I've been doing this same podcast and blog post for, I don't know, 30 years. Its sources go direct. This is what has changed, and the gatekeepers are gone, and they've been gone for a long time. To an extent that I didn't even realize it. I mean, you could sense that, I don't know, it was 2016 was when it was very clear that the gatekeepers weren't controlling things. For the Republicans, for Trump. No impact on Trump whatsoever. And at that moment, you know, it would be like, I mean, some people don't like sports analogies. I don't even make sports analogies. I just think this is the same thing as sport. Because there's only one human type of human thing going on here. And sport is tapping into the tribal thing, the community thing, the village construct, which is what we've had for, you know, for tens of thousands of years, if not more. I mean, you know, we grew up, you know, we came out of a tribal culture, but we don't have that anymore. You know, we live in places where we have very, very little physical, real contact with other people. So we have things that fill the gap for us in that. And you could feel it if you like watching, binge watching shows. If you get comfort from that, if you find yourself thinking about the people in the shows after you've finished binging it and going, you know, thinking to yourself just automatically, I wonder what they're doing. Then you realize that was a TV show. They're not doing anything. But your mind can't help but drift into that because it's very natural to do that. And okay, so we don't feel very powerful in most of our lives. We have opinions, we share them. Online has helped somewhat, but we all have the sense that we're not really having any impact ourselves, but we allow ourselves to be impacted. Like, I mentioned this, Archie Bunker, and I know that that's a generational thing, and I'm sure there are equivalents to Archie Bunker in every generation. In my generation, it was part of a TV show called All in the Family, and it was our common family. I mean, look at the name. It's called All in the Family. Everybody's in the family. That includes you. You get to know all of the characters, and they're subtle. They're not one-dimensional characters. And you learn that about Archie Bunker, that, you know, he has all the surface characteristics of the time. At the time, it was construction workers and cops and working class people versus, you know, the protesters, which was Meathead, you know, and Gloria. They were the young, relatively speaking, young protesters, anti-Vietnam, pro women, pro freedom, gay people were fine, black people are fine, but Archie in his heart, you know, it's hard because it reaches down inside and you realize that you could trust Archie to be who he is. That's the level of trust you could have in him. That's actually pretty much the most trust you can have in anybody. I don't think Archie ever deliberately lies, but he certainly says plenty of things that aren't true. If you had a choice between Archie Bunker for President of the United States and somebody you don't know, well, Archie Bunker, what we have found out is that even though Archie Bunker doesn't represent the politics of a lot of people who voted for him, a lot of people voted for him. Their politics are more like Meathead and Gloria and Lionel and Maude. And Maude, you know, none of those characters, of course, would ever vote for Archie Bunker. But we're not talking about the characters. We're talking about actual voters. And I don't think it's ever been different, honestly. I mean, you know, it's not like that, you know, people voted for Kennedy over Nixon. They didn't really know very much about Kennedy. He was a leader of a party that was in the middle of a huge identity crisis. He was the reason that, not he was the reason, but he was a liberal, and the Democratic Party had a very big component to it, which was the opposite of liberal. They were the ancestors of slavers. They were they were pro-segregation. They were lynchers. They were oppressors of black people in the South, southern United States. They were not who we think of as Democrats today. And this is when the split happened. I mean, and it continued with Lyndon Johnson. But that isn't how why they chose anybody chose to vote for Kennedy. If you saw a picture of the debate between Kennedy and Nixon, there was your answer. I mean, they knew Nixon really well. I guess I'm undermining my own theory here, actually, because they didn't know Kennedy all that well. But when you look at him, you feel attracted to this human being in a way that makes you feel like you really know him. It happens in love. It happens in human relations. Have you ever gotten zinged, where you look at a person, you know, and you say, "Oh my God, that's the most beautiful person I've ever seen." And it doesn't come out in words like that. It all comes out in an instant, in a feeling that just says, "There is no more beautiful person in the entire world. This is the person for me." Right? This happens like that in an instant. It doesn't necessarily take time. But bluntly, you know, I mean, Kamala Harris was fantastic, is a fantastic ca candidate. If she had been on a show, the Kamala Harris show, starting at any point, she could have had a podcast going, you know, starting with the Kavanaugh hearings, where she played a role, not, I wouldn't say a starring role, but she was. That was her first appearance in any episode of the great American political pantheon. The show that should be that the journalists, so-called journalists, are doing a really terrible job of keeping us involved. And maybe it's also up to the Democratic Party, because maybe they just haven't been finding really charismatic, interesting people you want to know more, who you want to know more about. This is how it works. I mean, you put out a pilot program and they see how people respond to it. And if they respond to it, they then order a full season. And well, okay, so we also, by the way, FYI, the first campaign we had with Harris, she was awful. She was terrible. And at the time that Biden switched over to her, when that happened, I was far from satisfied that I assumed she was the same awful candidate she had been. Also in 2020, she was not a great candidate, but that was a very, you know, that was a very difficult election because of the pandemic. They had, you know, they had rallies with in parking lots where people honked their horns, and it was the most awkward bullshit you've ever seen. It was terrible. It was really embarrassing. They couldn't find some way to use the online system to get some of that going. They were so uncomfortable with the new media, that whoever it was. She wasn't that. See, they were very good, actually, in 2024. I was surprised, and she was charismatic. She was charming. She was intelligent. She was forceful. She had really gone to school on winning. She had gone to winning school, and she was surprisingly, shockingly good. Because another thing, I said this to a friend yesterday, that the thing people don't account for here, you haven't heard anybody say this, I haven't heard anybody say this, is that, my God, what an awful circumstance, what a botched campaign this was by the Democrats, net-net. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular, although maybe there are some places to point those fingers. But botched is hardly the word for it. I mean, up until June, I guess it was, the candidate was Joe Biden. We all had a lot of concerns about him. What happened in that debate, I don't know about you, but I dreaded watching him speak because I knew someday that was going to happen. And that goes all the way back to the 2020 campaign, the primaries for the 2020 campaign. I thought he was so fragile that it could happen at any time. And if he made it through a speech without falling apart like he did in the debate, big sigh of relief, you know. And he was totally not the man for our time. And so, okay, I don't care how it happened, but he's running until the debate, and then the debate happens, and I despise the New York Times for the role they played in this. This should have been allowed to happen in the Democratic Party. And for whatever, it couldn't have had a worse outcome. Let's be clear about that. What we were risking was that he would lose instead of Harris losing, okay? And you know, if you listen to Biden, I listened to him at the turkey ceremony. He sounded really good. He looked tan. He was relaxed. He sounded like, you know, the old Biden. I met Biden once, by the way, at the DNC in 2008 in Denver. And I just happened to be standing on the street, you know, the main street of where all the hotels were and the bars and shit. It's a really nice place, area. And there was this little crowd, you know, and I walked into the crowd and there was fucking Joe Biden. And he's tall and he's statuesque would be the word I would use. He's a tall man. He's very, very attractive. You know, I mean, I guess you'd think he would have to be, right? Because, you know, look at the level of power he's been at for his entire career. But he wasn't. Anyway, so what a botched campaign, right? I mean, so the fact that she did as well as she did counts a lot. She also had two handicaps as well. She was an African American. And Trump was even able to make that a little bit ambiguous, which is not good. And she's a woman. And she didn't. But the most important thing is we never got to really know her. There wasn't enough time. And this is really important. And this is something that the Democrats are not paying any attention to at all. Because they take themselves off the air after a campaign. All of the investment that they've made, of our money, by the way, they come to us with this plea and we just give money and money because we're so desperate not to have to deal with them losing, not because we're so excited about what they're going to do. We're like everybody else, you know. What they're saying about this, about the Democrats and people who vote for Trump, and what they're saying about the journalism, these are things that a lot of us agree with. Except we choose to see our vote as not, we would not vote for Archie Bunker. Because a vote really isn't a way of expressing yourself. Your vote is your way of governing. It's a fundamental different approach. But forget about trying to convince people of that. There isn't time to do that. In any given election, you got to win the fucking election. This is what Carville said, I thought I was so impressed with. He said that if you don't win, it doesn't matter what you think. That isn't exactly what he said, but it's a very sort of Texas, New Orleans type thing to say. It's something that Ann Richards would say. You know, it's like if you don't win, it don't matter. So, you know, winning in the American political system, which isn't the worst political system in the world, involves compromise. It involves that, okay, you know, we don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's probably going to turn out better with a white man than it does with a woman of color. That maybe we should give ourselves the advantage one year and make it a little bit more likely that we win or win by a larger margin or just fucking give the people what they want. You know, I mean, it's like, do we have to have this argument every frickin' time? You know? We don't, we should all be thinking about what Carville said there. And that just general idea is so true. You know, it's like what a good sports player would say, you know, I don't really care about how many, assists I did or whether I got a, double double or double triple double or whatever. What I care about is my team won. And the reason in sports is a little elusive as to why it matters in the team won. In politics, it's not elusive. It's very, very concrete, as we are going to find out, as we are so scared to find out. But now we're on that path and we're going to find out again. It's like, this is something we did not need. But we should move now. We should stop. It doesn't matter. None of the things people are talking about matter. It's not about messaging. It's not about kitchen table. It's not being on the side of working people. The Democrats really are all those things. In reality, that is what they are. In terms of what they do for us, when they get in power, and they're empowered enough to actually pass laws, and you get an artist at Washington politics like fucking Joe Biden. I mean, he did so much with so little. You want that. And so you need to be as strong as you can be. And what we have to never, ever do again is have a candidate running for president that the people really don't have a good feeling for. And tolerate. That's the other thing. I put that in my piece today. It's not enough that they are familiar with them. They also have to tolerate them. And I didn't say that they have to fall in love with them, because typically that isn't what happens. I mean, it happened with Kennedy, but go look at Kennedy, okay? You find somebody that conveys that kind of confidence and authority and caring, and he's so American. It's like, he had everything, the whole thing, the whole package. You find a Kennedy, let's go. We can elect him. And I don't give up on women or women of color or whatever. Don't give up on that. But accept the reality that, like any other candidate, they have to run the gauntlet. And that doesn't just mean for, like, it means basically people have to feel comfortable with them and feel like they know them. This is very, very, very important. It may not be important in every culture and every country. It is very, very important in the United States. You can't wish it to be different from what it is. And you can't change it just because you want it to change. You have to accept it as it is. And it's not a bad country. It's just that I think I've explained myself. And I want to thank you for listening. And we'll do this again soon, hopefully. Bye.